It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Thunderstruck here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. And we have a great remainder of the show for you today. In the third hour, we have Peter Schiff, man. He's going to be telling us what's up with the Federal Reserve and quantitative easing. You had to look that up. What does quantitative easing mean? It means printing more money from nothing. That's what it means. Well, let me tell you, somebody that knew a whole bunch about that has set a whole generation ablaze with the information that we did. It was none other than G. Edward Griffin, and we have him on right now, but he has another issue. And I remember in 04, I'm running for U.S. Senate against McCain, and let me tell you what I was passing out everywhere. Bootleg copies of black box voting. And Edward Griffin was responsible for that, too. And he's got another one that he's coming out with. What in the world are they spraying with fellow filmmaker Michael Murphy? Edward and Michael, I got you guys there.
Yeah, I'm on the line.
I'm on the line as well. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, this has been an issue that I know a lot of people have been really interested in this. We've put a lot of stories, you know, whenever it comes to something of interest, we'll put it up on Freedom's Phoenix. It gets out there. It's not a secret. The one thing that kind of got my attention, though, was when I think it was Barbara Boxer, or was it Feingold? I think it was Boxer, that there was some legislation in the U.S. Senate that they put up to make weather control legal, and kind of gave, mapped it out and outlined what they would do and how and so on. I know Barbara's not smart enough to be coming up with this, so somebody told her to introduce this thing. Do you know about that legislation?
We've been reading about different pieces of legislation that have been either in committee or being ballyhooed by the congressmen and senators themselves. This has been going on for I'm going to guess now for well over a decade, probably two decades. They're always talking about what they're going to do in the future. We're going to control the weather. We're going to make it better for people so that the crops will grow better, and we won't have drought, and we won't have these severe storms, and we're going to steer cyclones and hurricanes away from big cities. And they always talk about these things as though they're doing it for us. You know, they're doing it for mankind. It's for the betterment of the people themselves. And so most of us just sit by and say, oh, that's not nice that we have these nice, trustworthy scientists and politicians and corporations all working on our behalf. Well, lo and behold, it turns out that that's not what's happening at all. They certainly are intending to control the weather if they haven't already done so. And they certainly are intending to change the climate and the chemical composition of the atmosphere. They say supposedly to slow down global warming, which in my view is a myth to begin with, but that's not the real issue here. They say that that's their motive for spraying all these things. But when you really get into it, you find out that no, there are other agendas as well. And not only are they doing it, but they're denying that they're doing it, which means that they're lying to us about it. So all of these things come together, and that's the motive for Michael and Paul Wittenberg and I to get together and produce this documentary film to show what it is they're spraying, why they say they're spraying it, or planning on doing so if they haven't admitted that they're already doing it. And then what it's doing to human health, what it's doing to wildlife, what it's doing to the crops of the world.
No, this is what we need asked. You know, it's important. You know, I'm glad somebody's asking the question, but I got to get this. I'll get to you in a second, Michael, but it'll be the same question I have for J. Edward here, is that you have been part of freeing of minds over decades on issues of importance that were not mainstream, that were not well known, that were not supported by the lamestream media, the media that's so last century. I mean, I don't think that you've come out, you know, saying over embellishing anything. I don't think that you've come. You just, you know, here's the facts, here's the issues, and it starts off with, you know, I'm sure there's other issues, but right off, someone that would be brave enough way before it was popular. The Federal Reserve. Then you come out and challenge electronic voting, which I found surprising, and, you know, thank you very much. And then you come out with chemtrails, and I'm going, you know, as much as someone would think that they're not important on these other issues, they come to be enormously important and widely supported your views of, you know, there's at least a problem that needs to be examined. What prompted you to do the chemtrail thing? How do you link, you know, a focus in the education of the populace on something like the Federal Reserve and then electronic voting, and all of a sudden we jump to chemtrails? Where's the link? What's the commonality between all these?
Well, it's hard to identify the commonality, except that I try and keep an open mind to important issues, and I'm well aware that the most important issues of all generally are either ignored completely in the mainstream media, or they're played down, and they're given a back seat to more dramatic events. You know, they like to keep us focused on non-important things compared to the really important things. So I'm aware of all of those things. But the reason I got into this chemtrail issue is not because I made a conscious decision to say, okay, and it's time now to turn my attention to chemtrails. I wished I'd had the time to do that. But it's because I ran into Paul Wittenberg and Michael Murphy, who were a couple of young filmmakers who had just decided that they wanted to do a documentary on this topic. And we ran into each other almost by accident, I guess. They contacted me and asked if I had any opinions about chemtrails. I said, oh, sure, I got plenty of opinions. I said, I haven't done much research, at least at that stage. But they came over to get my opinions recorded on videotape to add to their documentary. So we got to meet each other and talked about the importance of the topic. And I suggested that if they needed any help in exposure and promotion or funding, maybe I could help by introducing the topic to our subscribers. So we struck a deal real fast. We said, yeah, let's all pool our resources. And so that's how it happened. It's just like so many things, you know, you don't plan on it, but it just happens.
Michael, you know, we're going to come up on the break here, but to get started on your story. Why? What prompted you to develop an interest in this and certainly to do a film? I mean, have you done films in the past, or that's just a medium that you wanted to take advantage of?
Exactly. No, I haven't done any. I've done some short films in the past, but like most people, the first person that pointed, that told me about chemtrails, I really thought that they were crazy. And then I began to notice over the next couple of years that the skies in Phoenix had been changing. They had been turning to a more milky white, and I didn't know what was causing that. But a couple of years after that, somebody actually pointed out a chemtrail, and they showed me one, and it started to make sense. So I started researching and looking online, and
well, we'll get to that when we come back. I mean, you know, you got me on the edge of my seat. I can't wait to hear what Michael Murphy has to say about chemtrails, along with G. Edward Griffin. We're going to learn a whole bunch. You guys, we got plenty of time. You guys sit back. We're all going to learn something. It's time. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Truth, justice, and Well, it used to be the American way, whatever the heck that was. You know, I tell you, you know, some guys that, you know, used to know what that meant or had a definition or an idea. Who? I mean, who are the people that we go to? Who are some of the people that can, you know, give us an idea, a concept of what the proper role of government is, what they should be doing? What's the one thing, you know, defense of what? Individual rights. I mean, you know, life, liberty, property kind of thing. It seems like this chemtrail thing is like a violation of everything. You know, if they're doing me harm, should I know about it? Well, who's going to tell me about it? Well, you know, G. Edward Griffin, we've known him from The Creature from Jekyll Island. We've known him from Black Box Voting. We now have him involved in a film where one of the filmmakers, Michael Murphy, has been motivated to get involved because of what he's experienced. Now, Michael, go ahead and tell me, what was it that kind of got you, I can see motivated, you actually see it, you're feeling it, there's some kind of personal interaction, but, you know, what gave you the confidence that you know, I'm going to be the one, because nobody else is, I'm going to be the one to do this film? I mean, how do you move from being motivated to say something, all of a sudden, boom, you're acting on it? What put you over the hurdle?
Well, I'll tell you what the catalyst was. After knowing about the issue and talking to the public and finding out that very few people knew much about the issue, I went down to the American Association for the Advancement of Science meeting this past February in San Diego. And for 3 days, I listened to geoengineers talk about their plans and proposals of spraying 10 to 20 million tons of toxic aluminum into the sky for what they said was the stated goal to cool the planet. Many of the listeners probably know how toxic aluminum is. It's very toxic to human health, of course. In the past 10 years, we've seen worldwide a dramatic increase in aluminum-related illness, and aluminum is very toxic to ecosystems. So I was literally shocked when I heard of these plans, these proposals. As Mr. Griffin said, they flat out denied that these programs have been started. However, I met many other activists at that meeting that said, you know what, you've got to come and start investigating this, because we have a mountain of evidence that shows that these programs are ongoing and are literally destroying ecosystems and human health. So that's really the catalyst. I got very, very shocked and very concerned, and I just started investigating this, and I thought and still feel that the world needs to know what's happening.
If you go to today's archived show, Declare Your Independence, Ernest Hancock Afternoon, October 14th. If you go, you're listening to this on the podcast, you go there. If you're listening live now around the country, you just go to freedomsphoenix.com, freedoms with an S, phoenix.com, and you go into today's archived show, and you'll see the trailer for the movie. You can go to the website. You can get the contact information for these guys, put them on your shows and promote them. Because I tell you, this is something that we at least need to know what people are alleging. I mean, you know, and you can do your own research and evidence, but that a lot of people have, and that's what the movie's about. There are people out there, because I always ask this, Michael, Edward, I'll tell you, this is I go, you know, how come somebody just doesn't take a Learjet, go up and, you know, shoot up behind one of these planes and just take a sample, go down and test it? Come on, man, let's get on. Now, of course, I know the FAA might not, you know, love that too much, or a military or something, but I'm going, we could just test the air. We could just test it. Follow the plane. He's landing. Get it. Give me something. I mean, but people have done that, haven't they? They've tested the air. Tell me about the evidence that you have.
Well, that's correct. There's been numerous air tests, which we do cover in the documentary, which reveal very high amounts, again, of aluminum, barium, and strontium. I'm going to take you up to our first stop in the documentary, which was in Northern California. And about 7 years ago, Francis Mangles, who is a retired biologist, took a snow test from Mount Shasta, and this was really before a lot of the spraying occurred. And he found aluminum levels at 7 parts per billion, which is pretty high. But last year he took a test, and those levels escalated over 50,000% to 61,100 parts per billion, and other tests have revealed over 250,000 parts per billion. The reason they started doing the test was because the pH of the soil was changing. Everything started dying up in that area, including forests. A lot of farmers were having difficulty growing their plants. So they started testing the soil. What they found was the soil was starting to go basic. It was increasing in alkalinity, and that's what provoked them to do the rain test and the snow test, which, of course, again, revealed very high amounts of aluminum, barium, strontium. The aluminum matches geoengineers' plans, of course, of what they were planning on spraying. And there's also a patent called the Hughes Aircraft Patent, the Welsbach patent. It's a patent for a device of spraying out of airplanes aerosol, aluminum, and other particles. So, you know, to recap what I'm saying, geoengineers' plans match patents and match this massive amount of fallout, which is occurring. And it's not just here in the Northern California area. This fallout is, from what we found, is being found around the world, and ecosystems are being destroyed, and we're pretty sure we have the answer to is why it's happening.
Well, this is one thing that was of interest to me. Edward, you know, I keep apprised of this. A lot of my readers, you know, they'll put stuff up. Freedom's Phoenix is kind of an open, you know, news source. Go ahead, put whatever you find. All of a sudden, I started seeing newscasts from Europe. Here we have the weather guys up there going, you know, it's translated, and they're showing radar pictures of this stuff in the air, and they're going, look, this is not a cloud. And they're outing these guys in Europe far more than here in the United States. What can you tell me about that? What is going on that they are able to do or they're willing to say that we're not here?
Well, I wish I had the firm answer to that. But in general, I know that the United States seems to be the center of all of this, seems to be the command center, so to speak, of this whole movement. We know from empirical evidence that this same thing is going on in all of the NATO countries, and we get reports that they're even going on to some extent in other countries as well, but it seems to be concentrated in NATO countries. But the United States seems to be the dominant and or the leader, the leading force behind it. So I think it's an unpleasant thing for me to say, but I think it's also true that the mass media in the United States is a little more controlled than it would be in Europe. The media in the United States does not want to go contrary to anything which is politically incorrect or politically frowned upon by the power structure in Washington. They like to get along. And so there are a lot of things that the media will not report on. We do get a lot of reports in the United States on this, but it's almost always at the local level. Some small station in some community or medium-sized community will get a report, and they'll do an honest analysis of it. But you will never find it at the national level, at the network level, unless it's to deride those who are bringing this to public attention.
You know, that's one thing that I noticed in your trailer and a lot of pieces that people will put up on Freedom's Phoenix and on the Internet and YouTube and all that. It's always about some local newscast that was done going, yeah, you know, we did it. We went and tested it. I mean, a lot of times, like in Colorado and so on, they'll have, you know, we're going to put this to bed, and they go out and they test the water. They get some scoop of snow, and they go out and they go, yep, it's there. Yeah, it's there. And now let's talk about Britney Spears' belly button ring. I mean, you know, so I mean, they'll put it out, but there's no follow up. It's like, yes, we did our bit and now we're done with it. Well, that leaves a lot of slack to be taken up by individuals, by us, by we the people, by people that are just going to, you know what? I can share this with the rest of the planet. It's called the Internet. It's called duplicating DVDs. It's called sharing information. It's called a website. We're going to talk about that more, how this movement is being fueled, what you can do, where you can you get the information, is there really a threat, and when the movie is going to be available. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I want to.
God knows, and everybody else, I can tell.
God.
I just want to break free from the lies and cover the secrets, exposing the lies here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, my special guest online, G. Edward Griffin and Michael Murphy. The film is What in the World Are They Spraying? Michael, when's it coming out? When am I going to have it available?
Well, right now, you can go to realityzone.com and order your copy. We're selling them today. They're going to be shipping in just about a week on the 22nd. And also want to mention our premiere is going to be in Atlanta, Georgia at the History Center on the 23rd. So if anybody's listening in Atlanta, we'd love to have you come. Tickets are very fairly priced. And you can also meet myself, Mr. Griffin, and Paul Wittenberger.
I want a movie, I want a movie, I want a movie. You know, this is what we do. We have here at Freedom's Phoenix, our workshop here, they always have movie night. Every Saturday night, they're always featuring some movie. So as soon as we can get the movie, I'm sure one of the guys is already ordering it. And you're taking pre-orders for it, and I'm sure it's going to be a popular event here, and we have, you know, a little bit of a potluck and watch a movie, and I'm sure we'll enjoy it on the big screen. But the thing is that... how's the sales been? I mean, you know, tell me, you know, you already had this out for pre-sales. Let me know what's the popularity of it.
Well, I can answer that question. Our response has been absolutely phenomenal. We thought that we'd have trouble raising revenue to produce the film. We had asked for donations in the beginning to get that started because our plan was to make the program free on the internet is very soon after it was released. We were worried about recovering our production expenses and all that, so I announced it, and you should see the response. Within 2 days, we had met our production goals, and I was just looking at the list of people who sent their donations in, just looking at it earlier today, and I was amazed at how many countries were represented on that list. I was thinking, oh, surely this is all the USA, but not at all. I just, at brief count, counted about 12 different countries that responded. There might be more than that. So the response has been overwhelming, and as far as the orders are concerned, they're coming in. I mean, I check every hour or so, and the numbers have jumped tremendously. We're expecting possibly to hit 50,000 or 100,000 real soon.
Wow. Jigs up, man. Oh, it's not a secret anymore. You know, it's one thing, you know, Edward, you and I have met several times over the years, and I've had you on the show before, and we've talked about a lot of interesting subjects and so on, but it never ceases to amaze me, your involvement in these kinds of various issues. I mean, if I had to look at a common theme, it's just truth. I mean, we just need to understand what's really going on important issues. And I just need to know, what is it that drives you to participate in these kind of things? Because these are controversial issues. You knew up against the big bad boys. When you do Creature from Jekyll Island, you start talking about the Federal Reserve. You know, you don't get a whole lot of love from the man. You know what I mean? So I'm just like wondering, what kind of repercussions have you had with taking on these cases?
Well, interesting questions altogether. What drives me? I don't know. Sometimes I think it must be a little bit of masochism because it does bring with it certain problems, you know. But it's frankly, it's just because I can't help myself. I look at what's going on in the world, and I'm one of those people. I guess I just have a crusader instinct. I just feel like somebody's got to do this. Somebody's got to stand up for these issues. It not only affects me, but my children and my grandchildren. And I love this country, and I hate to see it being destroyed. I'm just motivated to do something about it. Fortunately, I'm in a position to do that. My background, my training, my aptitudes and everything have sort of point me in the direction that I can do the research and the writing and the film production. So I'm fortunate in that. And so I feel very grateful. But as far as repercussions are concerned, I've not had any serious repercussions. You're right. We're standing up against the really big bad boys. And I'm sure they don't know, they know what I'm doing. They don't like what I'm doing. I'm sure I'm in their files somewhere. Somewhere down that line, I expect probably to be visited or be informed in some way that they don't like it. But, you know, that's not going to work because I'm not afraid. I just know it has to be done. I feel like, probably a soldier would feel in battle. You know you have to do something. It's very dangerous. And there are people out there that might even want to kill you. As a matter of fact, that's the whole idea of warfare, isn't it? And yet you're there anyway because you have to. It's your patriotic duty. It's your obligation to your family and to the future. So that maybe sounds overly dramatic, but that really is how I feel.
Well, you know, I tell you what the common thread has been for people in this fight, you know, that I come across and, you know, kind of the motivations that we have here is it's kind of the Spider-Man thing. I remember in the original Spider-Man, the whole point was is that he had this power. All of a sudden, now he's strong. And he go, and then the person that in the comic book killed his aunt, and in the movie he killed his uncle or something. He had the power to stop him, and he didn't. He just wanted to be more selfish with his abilities and what he had to do. And what he realized is because he can, because he has the ability, because no one else is doing it, there's an obligation that you have because it always comes around to bite you. If you don't take advantage of your skills and your aptitudes and your vocation that you've chosen to be able to support these kinds of spreading of the message of truth, justice, whatever, if you don't take advantage of that, oftentimes you'll find later that you're bitten by the bug that you could have squashed a long time ago. So this is, I just get that feeling that when you have people in your position that have the capacity to bring light to these kinds of things, it really, it, more than it's an altruistic thing, it's more a self-preservation thing. And as time goes on, you see how your life and that of the people that you love are benefited by you taking action that maybe a lot of other people might not because they don't understand the importance of doing it. How far off am I?
Oh, I don't think you're off at all. Right on target, at least insofar as I see it. Sometimes you just aren't unable to explain the feelings or your rationale for doing it. You just do it because it feels right. Because why do people do what is right? They just do it because it's the right thing to do. And if they don't do it, they have a problem with their conscience. They have a problem with self-image. If I weren't doing something constructive and important, I would have to look at myself and say, why in the heck are you here on this planet, Edward? You know, what are you here, just to enjoy yourself and consume things? No, it's much more pleasant and rewarding and fulfilling to say, well, I'm here to get the truth out. I'm here to fight the good battle. You know, I think we all have that instinct in us.
Now, you know, you're making my point, Edward. I mean, this is my point. A lot of people will say, well, you need to care about people. You need this. You need that. I'm like, yeah, but fortunately, I personally get pleasure. I feel better. I sleep better. Me and sleep are buddies, okay? So I sleep better. My life is enriched. I'm selfish. I am better off. My family is depends. I care about. I feel better by doing these kinds of things. Where somebody from the left will say, no, you got to do it because it's a sacrifice. I mean, you need to feel bad about doing it. It's not worth it if you don't feel pain for doing it. And I'm like, no. Fortunately, if you have a healthy intellect, if you have a healthy emotional state, you know that by doing the right thing, not only does it make you feel better, it makes your life better. So, you know, Michael, let's go ahead and get to you. I mean, are you starting to have this kind of infect the way that you're living your life and the example that you're getting from Edward?
Well, absolutely. And he's been an incredible mentor. I'm learning a lot of great things. We're just talking today, but you know, when based on the research that we've done, I really, really believe, and I know that we're in a real crisis. We're seeing our ecosystems being destroyed. We're seeing our food, which we believe this is in part, you know, methods in programs to destroy anything that's natural and organic, and then redesign with GMO seeds, and then what we're spraying is extremely toxic to human health. And of course, we've seen dramatic increases of illnesses related to the aluminum, barium, and strontium. So, you know, I think there's a certain obligation, at least that's how I feel, when you know what's being done, you've been given this information, and, you know, I have two choices. I can be quiet and allow them to kill me because we're all slowly dying from these substances, or I can stand up and start speaking. And you know, God has been gracious to open up these doors and allow me to get involved with some great people and give me a platform to speak on. And, you know, so for me, I think it comes down to, yes, I love what I do, and I feel like I'm definitely called to do this, but there's also an obligation to humanity.
You know, this is the one thing. When we come back in the next segment, we'll talk about it some more, but I want to make this point. You know, this is the trait of humanity that has to be beaten out of us. This is what has to be, I don't know, chemically altered. They have to turn us into something else other than life-loving individual human beings that have love as our first reaction to anything. They change us. Why? And to accomplish what? We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here from Phoenix, Arizona. Well, you know, we have gray skies here, too. And I tell you, you know, I'm 49 years old. I was born in 1961. I lived in Florida till I was 12. I moved here. I have been from places that are blue skies. I mean, you always had fluffy white against a dark blue sky in Florida as a kid. You moved out here to the desert. It was always blue until the summer. You had monsoons and you see the big cumulus clouds coming in. Well, now they don't come in because of the heat island, all the concrete here. So they kind of stay around the outside. But when they do come in, ooh, it's a gully washer. But the thing is that I remember the sky was bluer. They have an entire generation growing up now that it's rare. They don't know what it's like. You have to have a storm. You have to have rain. You have to have something happen. You go, oh, you see that blue? Kids, come here. Look. You see that? That's what it used to be every day. It's not like that anymore. I need to know why. What are they trying to change in us? What are they trying to change the food? Are they trying to get a monopoly on genetically altered whatever? It's the only thing that can grow. Here's your Monsanto corn. I mean, what's going on? Edward, give me some speculation here, man.
Well, it's part speculation and part hard information. And I think you just touched on a couple of good points right there. We know that they say that they're trying to combat global warming. They say that they're trying to affect weather so they can control the weather, supposedly, for the betterment of mankind, to improve crops and to avoid storms and disasters of that kind of thing. All right, that's what they say, and if you want to just accept that and say, well, they're making a mistake because what they're doing in trying to save mankind is they're poisoning mankind. They're making it worse than making it better. That would be the easy answer. But we know now that it's a little more sinister than that. There are some hidden agendas. There's money to be made in this project, and there's power to be obtained. The corporations and the engineers and scientists stand to make tremendous amounts of money because this is all funded eventually by the taxpayer. It's all done through government channels of finance, and they're trying to officially get it to the international level now. All be done through the United Nations and through political subdivisions. So the amounts of money will never be questioned. It's just if they want $1 billion or $1 trillion to continue it, and nobody will question it. It all comes out of the taxpayers' dollars. So I know that there are a lot of people in this food chain that are looking at this as a great source of revenue for themselves. And then also we know that the military is looking at these things as a means of controlling the population and conducting warfare. The military has published papers that are even public. You can see them on the Internet now. They say, we the military, must control the weather. Well, why does the military want to control the weather? Because they want to use it as a weapon. They want to use it as a weapon against nations or regions. They want to be able to artificially create droughts, if necessary, or famines in certain areas in order to cause the population to be forced into submission. Corporations are interested in this because, as you suggested a moment ago, if the soil can be changed so that it's no longer its natural pH level, the normal crops will wither and they won't grow anymore. But there are corporations which are working, as we know, they're bragging about it, in developing seeds that will grow in alkaline soil. So now the farmers won't be able to get the seeds anymore that they used to save in their barns and you know, grow the crops over and over again from their own resources. Now they'll have to go to the corporations and buy these genetically engineered seeds, and the whole planet will be dependent on corporations for its food supply. Well, you can go on and on and on. There are many other possible areas that need to be explored. We've touched on some of them, and we finally came to the conclusion, Ernest, that, you know, all of these things put together are almost too much, and they cause the average person who's not aware of any of it to recoil and say, oh, my gosh, this is too much. I don't believe any of this. So what we're trying to do is just simplify it and focus on the most obvious and the most elemental component, which is we know and we can prove that they are spraying toxic substances, which they say is supposed to be to prevent global warming. And we know and we can prove that these substances are falling to the earth, they can be measured, and they're causing all kinds of severe damage to human health, crops, and to the ecosystem. How much more do we need to know than that?
That the government's bad, 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 bad. You know, this is the one thing we talk about a lot here on the show. I always, if I want to get a view, a snapshot of the future, I want to see where we're going. There was three things that I'd focus on, and I think I need to add a fourth, you know, after talking to you guys, and probably should have known this before, but I always look at transportation, communication, and energy. All of these things are how individuals are be able to, you know, separate themselves from the man, the grid. You know, if I'm able to communicate, first it starts with the printing press, you know, then we go up through mass media, you know, radio and television and then the internet and so on. You get to the communication, I can be anywhere on the planet and satellite broadcast my web show, Wayne's World Basement thing. I mean, you know, that. So communication, mind-to-mind communication around the planet, this is going to happen. Happened with your movie, I guarantee it. Then you have transportation. You know, we got Spaceship One. Heck, we're going to space. We're going to have 90 minutes from New York to Paris. We're going to be doing space tourism. We're going to have space stations going to the moon. We're going to be able to travel fast. We're going to have electric cars. I'm for where we're going, Narnia Rhodes, man. I just, you know, what happened to my Jetson flying car? Government got in the way. Then you have energy. All of a sudden, sooner or later, there is going to be unlimited energy to an individual. That unplugs you. That gets you off the grid. That gets you out in the Lone Prairie, De La, whatever, when you have the ability to travel anywhere you want, you know, from offshore or in the mountains and go to work, or you can just work at home. You have the ability to communicate with anyone on the planet at any time from anywhere, and you have the energy. The one thing that you don't have is food. And if you aren't able to feed yourself, if you aren't able to get clean water, which hopefully you'll be able to, you know, filter, I would imagine. But the food thing, I'm telling you, if you're looking into the future 10, 20 years, and you see that these serfs, these slaves, these useless eaters on the planet are just, you know, mucking up your plan and you need to get rid of them, you have to do it on a global scale. You have to change them. You have to make them subservient. You have to have them coming to you to get whatever it is that you want to market to them. And I see this food thing as such an important issue, and I always have to ask myself, can they do it? If they can, then they are, because they have no moral hurdle that's high enough for them not to want to, you know, go over. I mean, you know, we wouldn't, you know, kill the biosphere. That'd be wrong. We wouldn't do that, you know. So I can see this. So, Michael, in light of that comment, you start to see that, yes, I can see how they, them, those that won't leave us alone, are threatened by our very existence, that I can't think of any other way that they might get an upper hand on us than something like this. Is there other things we should be concerned about, or is your attention on this?
Well, this is what we're focusing on right now, and I want to go back to the food thing, because we spent a week on an organic farm in Maui, Hawaii, and we got called out there. People said, hey, you know, we think we have some evidence that you want to look at, and for a week, we stayed on the farm, and it was complete freedom, because we would pick our breakfast, our lunch, and our dinner just off of the land. And there was a group of locals that lived on that part of the island completely off the grid. What they're finding, it appears they're spraying offshore. In the aluminum, barium, strontium, we know conclusively, because they've done the test, is falling on them. But the coconut trees and the things that they're growing are now starting to die. And a big concern with the people on that part of the island who are aware of what's going on is that their food supply is going to be destroyed, and they won't be able to grow natural organic food. And looking ahead 10 years, they're concerned that they may have to be dependent on a company such as Monsanto or something else to purchase seeds. And, you know, when I left, I just left. I didn't feel good at all, because I really feel like this is the end of their freedom. If they have to go and get GMO seeds, what are the requirements for that?
Well, is there something that's going to be, do we understand what they're doing to the soil that you can counteract it? I mean, is there, you can change the, go back to more base pH levels? I mean, is there, you know, once you understand what the problem is there, you know, a we're informed solution?
Well, the informed solution is to get this trailing to stop. But I did speak with many scientists, and I said, is this irreversible damage? And everyone that I spoke to said, I don't know. They said, you know, it could be 20 years, it could be 20,000 years before it comes back to normal. They said, we just don't know at this time. So, you know, it appears, again, this is in part, you know, an attempt to control the food supply. But I think what you were hinting at before was also population control. And we know if we look at the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, even Bill Gates, who is a heavy funder into geoengineering programs, you don't have to look far before you look and see that they have heavily funded eugenics programs. They believe that there is a population problem, and they believe that it's their job to control this. So, you know, we don't think it's only population control. It's a multi, these are multi-agenda operations, but, you know, it certainly appears that it's playing into that because it is killing people. It is causing death.
G. Edward Griffin and Michael Murphy, what in the world are they spraying? You know, give me a primary web page that people should go to be able to pre-order the movie that's going to be shipped October 22nd. Give me a page here, Edward.
Yeah, it's real easy. It's Reality Zone. www.realityzone.com. And once you get there, you'll see it right there in the front page.
RealityZone.com. This is what we need. More information. More information. That's the only thing that's going to save us. Is just knowing what's trying to kill us. Yeah. Well, thanks to Edward Griffin and Michael Murphy for sharing some information with us that we need to know. Thank you guys very much.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You bet. My pleasure. We'll be right back with Peter Schiff.